So I get asked a lot, being in my 40s, how do I manage to continue to perform all season long at the level that I do? Well, you know, it's a lot of hard work, but I have a lot of help. Triple Threat Performance has been putting this old body back together again for years. I keep tearing it down, and they keep putting me back together. And now, apart from the physical therapy side, I got involved in their athletic training program. And honestly, I don't think the Mountains stand a chance this season. So if you're in the Phoenix area and you're interested in upping your game, check them out at www.ttpaz.com. That's ttpaz.com. Now let's roll into the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Phoenix Shooting Bags and Triple Threat Performance. Today we're going to be doing a little storytelling session, a little campfire session with Tony Treach. And, well, without further ado, what's going on, Tony? How are you?
Pretty good here. I'd complain about the heat, but I know you're in Arizona, so
nothing. Yeah. Where do you guys, where are you guys at now?
Oh, it's like mid-80s and humid.
Oh, but, God. I'd kill for some 80s right now. It was like 110 at like 10 a.m. this morning.
Couldn't do it.
It's messed up. I can't take it. I get so depressed when it comes, like, as soon as June hits, I'm done. I'm already done with Arizona for at least until, like, October. But, yeah. Yeah, you know, what are you going to do? It is what it is. The rest of the year, it's amazing here. It's just those 4 months that are just rotten hot and just miserable.
I was down there this winter to take my Hunter's Ed to get that extra bonus or preference point or bonus point, whatever. And it was nice when I got down there. I've been down there one time on a guy's buddy's like golf trip in August. And we were trying to play golf, and it's like,
no thanks.
Yeah.
No thanks. That's why the rates are so cheap that time of year. Yeah. They go from like $150 course to like $20 because nobody wants to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's rough. So tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, we'll go from there.
Yeah. Well, my name's Tony Treach. I am self-employed carpenter, entrepreneur. I've got a small business here in Northern Michigan that I built to basically allow me the freedom to hunt as much as I want. Started in my early 20s, and that was a long time ago. And my guys would tell you that my employees that I'm not around. You know, every year I'm around a little bit less, but that's what I built it for. You know, I wanted to be able to have the freedom to go out west, or, you know, it started out hunting the Midwest, and I would travel around Ohio, Illinois, and Kansas, and I'd be gone for, you know, for a couple months, and I just slowly kept going out west further and further, and I'm surprised I didn't do it earlier, just because I have a alpine skiing background, and I've always just loved the mountains, but for some reason I never really looked into it. I always thought it was kind of beyond, you know, my means, and so that's what I do now. That's pretty much my whole life. I work from time I get home hunting until it's time to leave to scout, and trying to manage my relationship with my lady so that she doesn't leave me while I'm gone hunting.
Exactly. I know that gig for sure. So you started off mainly whitetail hunting, and then you just started heading out west, and so you got quite a few good bulls back there behind you and some mule deer. So
I should have started earlier. I mean, it was it's definitely a, you know, game for younger legs, but I'll give it my best shot there the rest of the years I have.
Ah, you do just fine. Don't worry about it. I actually had some guy in the gym. It's funny that you bring that up. So I'm assuming you and I are pretty close in age. This kid's like 22 or 23, I think 23 years old. And we work out together because I'm at Triple Threat Performance, and we do this like, it's like a class. It's like 2 hours, 3 days a week. It's pretty rough. And he came up to me today. He's like, I've been wanting to tell you this. He goes, you're freaking strong, man. You're crazy. Like, and I'm like, it's just the old man strength, you know? We get, I said, when I was your age, actually, I was a lot stronger than I am now. But yeah, it felt good that I could still, you know, impress somebody that I still got something, you
He
know?
just wants you to take him hunting.
Yeah. No, I don't, he's not a hunter. I don't know. We talked about it a little bit. He's got a little interest in it, but he's not, he's definitely not. Right now he's too busy chasing two-legged deer. Those does around. But yeah, I got a couple kids that work for me. They're 19, 20, 21, you know, guides that work for me. Yeah, and they hike me all over the damn place and beat the shit out of me. But they're always impressed that I could still kind of, I still make it there. I don't get there as fast, but I make it there, you know?
I have
That's
no
it.
idea if how I do really, because I always hunt alone, so
Yeah.
I have no idea if I'm fast or slow. So that's good.
I'm definitely so. I was slow when I was in my 20s. I never really hiked fast or. But anyway, I digress. So, if you could share with us, let's start with maybe like your most memorable hunt.
Well, most memorable probably the once in a lifetime hunt I had last year in Idaho. I drew once in a lifetime Shivers moose tag in Idaho, and the funny thing is the way that they Idaho has the drawing result, or well, they got a new system this year, but the way they had it set up was when you went to check your controlled license or controlled tag license results, you actually. Well, there's two different numbers. There's your hunting license number, and then there's the tag application number. And I forget which one it was, but in my head, one of them made sense, and I put that number in at first, and it came back as, you know, not successful, whatever. And I didn't think anything of it. And someone, I saw someone post results, or you know, that they got the tag like a week or two later, and I thought, can I check that? But this time of the year, there's so many results coming out at once that it's just like I got to write them down, or otherwise I keep checking in and checking the same thing. But I went back and I checked it again, and I noticed that I put in the wrong number. I put in the right number, and I couldn't believe it. I was looking at a green result, and the phone call started. And one of the cool things about drawing a once in a lifetime tag is people are way more willing to kind of give you a helping hand and say, this area is a waste of time, or this, focus in on this area. And not only the hunters, but the biologists, the game wardens, everybody was just, I've never had so much positive responses to me asking, for information on the unit. And the local game conservation officer, he was just fantastic, and had lots of good suggestions. But basically, everybody suggested the same general area, and I thought, well, this is going to be easy. I mean, everybody basically gave me like four, five, six different drainages in the area, and until I got there and realized that that's about 20 square miles, and it reminds me actually a lot of here where I live. It's just thicker than it's not, and there's a few areas where you can glass, but there really wasn't a whole lot. And didn't get there. The season started, around September 1, I think, and I didn't get there till towards the end of the month, like the 18th. And it was just trying to time it to avoid the heat. I had a buddy that was up there hunting elk, and he said it was just, hotter than heck. And I was hunting over-the-counter elk tag in Colorado, so I was ready to get out of there and get over there. You got a tag like that burning in your pocket. But he said, just keep hunting elk. It's nothing's moving here. Nothing's good. And plus, everybody said the rut for the moose would be, the last 5 days of September, the first 5 days of October would probably be the best. So, anyways, there was like a monsoon coming into where I was at in Colorado, and it was gonna rain for a week. And I thought, well, what the heck? I'm just gonna get on the road and get up there. And I hit it just right. The temps just, it went from 70 to 50 overnight, and I mean, in my first morning hunting, I drove around the first night. Didn't even pull my bow out of the case, and I just wanted to get a feel for the unit, and that's when I realized, wow, this is a big, thick unit. And I've never hunted moose before, so I had been practicing moose calls all summer long, but I had no confidence in them. I was still going to try to resort to, if I could, spot and stalk, and hopefully find a spot with some cows and maybe there's bulls pestering them and sneak in. Well, after a night of driving around, the only reassuring thing was I ran into a guy that was elk hunting, and stopped to talk to him, and he said, "You got a moose tag? Well, I just saw a big moose, and hop on the four-wheeler, I'll take you right to it." And it was raining and 40 to 50 degrees, and after an hour quad ride, he showed me the mud pole they were drinking out of, and there was fresh tracks there, and all right, well, there's a starting point. And from there, there was snow like the next morning, like it's just a skiff, perfect skiff. And my theory was, I don't know the unit, so I'm just gonna cover some ground at first and try to find some tracks. And once I cut a track, if it's a good one, get on it and start walking and track them. And along the way, I tried to talk to every elk hunter I found. Wasn't too many deer hunters, but got a lot of odd looks from locals that were elk hunting when I told them I had a moose tag, and they're kind of like, "Yeah, we haven't seen a moose all year. I mean, you see him once in a while, but this, I live in the area. I wouldn't put in for a moose tag here." It's like, oh, that's not reassuring.
Yeah,
But
no, that sucks.
yeah, I had a guy later in the hunt actually tell me, he had been horseback hunting, I think, for 15 days or 14 days. Had a nice elk, and he was actually on his way out with this whole horse rig, and it was nice to talk to me. And he told me, he said he's been hunting there for 2 decades, and there's no way in hell he'd ever apply for that unit for moose. He said he couldn't give me that tag. He says, I mean, there go years where I don't see any bulls at all. So,
Oh my God.
but I was finding tracks, so I mean, there was hope. You think an elk walks fast, but a moose, you find a track that's just still steaming fresh. I mean, they would have had to have ran into a cow for me to catch up to them, or just at least get to a point where I could overlook in the area where they're walking. But it was just so thick, But yeah, the tracking was, I learned a lot about the area, and then eventually that would help me in the long run. Hindsight, and I've there's actually a young guy that got a hold of me on Rockslide that drew that tag this year, and I've been helping him out. And that, my first advice was, start calling. Don't be afraid of what you sound like. A moose cow sounds like an alien, when they're really getting after it, and they're just freaky sounding, so you really can't screw it up. But I tromped around for boy, I think it was probably 8 days, and I'd only seen five moose, two little bulls that were both yearlings. I mean, their antlers were literally like, a foot long. Yeah, just
Man size.
Yeah, it really was. It was like, there's no way I'm taking that. I mean, I'd rather just not shoot something. I felt bad, because I mean, they actually issued quite a few tags for this unit, and it used to be a good unit. But I think they're trying to figure out what the problem is, but they don't think they really have a handle on it yet. But they did cut the tags last year, and I think they cut them again this year. But anyways, I came out. I was day hunting, but I came out to where I had reception, and I made a phone call to a local friend, and he's like, "Just get in there and call. Sit your butt down and just stop chasing them around. The odds you catch one in that thick stuff is not good, and
Right.
catching up to one, and like just have faith." But I spent the first 20 years of my hunting life in the Midwest sitting in tree stands for, 12 hours a day. I can't stand sitting still anymore. And I was always that way, but if I could find a way to hunt where I don't sit, I'm much happier. So,
Yeah.
but he talked me into it, and said that, all right, I'm going back to, and I actually went back to that area where the old guy had told me the very first night. I'd been in there like 2 other days, and I really hadn't seen much fresh sign. But I went in there just because it's a little more open. It's not quite as thick as the other areas. And I thought, well, if I'll call here the rest of the day, come back in the morning, call again, and then maybe, if there's nothing there, then we'll replan it. But I'll give it a one shot. I don't think I was there 5 minutes, and making these goofy ass cow sounds where you sound like an idiot. I to take a step back. Earlier that day, I had just let out a couple cow sounds, and was up breaking branches and making all kinds of racket in a spot. where I thought it would be good, and an elk hunter actually snuck up behind me, and I just randomly turned over my shoulder and saw him looking at me through the trees, like, what the hell is that guy doing? And
I thought you were
I
trying
turned
to
him
call
to,
elk.
yeah, I turned him to wave, like the Trumbull's kind of, you almost want to explain yourself, like, well, I've got a moose tag, and he just turned and walked away, like, I'm not going anywhere near that
What
idiot.
is that?
Yeah.
Hand on his forehead.
So, that just doesn't help the confidence in your calling, but the other spot I got set up. I thought the wind was good, and I made a few big, long, lonesome cow sounds, and you hear a branch snap, and you're like, it's the kind of sound, for those that have hunted elk before. I mean, what the difference between like an elk snapping a branch and a deer snapping a branch? There's usually
Right.
you can tell it's a bigger animal, and that's the first thing I thought is that's either an elk or a deer, and I really hadn't seen any elk in this area, so I mean an elk or a moose. And just by the time I was about ready to make an our cow sound, he let out a long grunt, and it was just, the hair in the back of my neck, stood up, and about that time, and the wind also hit the back of my neck too, and
Oh,
I thought,
geez.
oh crap, he's coming right, he's almost due downwind. So I grabbed my backpack and the bow, and I take off running right straight downwind to try to kind of beat him to it. So if he does get down in my stream there, at least I'll maybe see him, because he wasn't far away. It's not like he was within 50 yards.
Oh, wow.
And I never heard another thing. I don't know if he smelled me, or I don't know if he actually saw me. I know our eyesight isn't quite as good as our other senses, but either way, I never heard another thing. So I went out to the little trail, the two track that was in between, kind of, or in the direction of where which he came from. And I found his track, but also I found three other tracks. And at first, again, you're looking at it, I mean, a big bull's track is just so darn big that when you see a
Right.
cow and two calves, you're almost thinking there's a bull and two cows. But it did end up being a bull, a cow, and two calves. And his track was tough to follow. It hadn't snowed in a couple days, and where he kind of turned off, I couldn't catch him again. But I went back to where the cow and the two calves were, and I was able to follow them. And I thought, well, if nothing else, I mean, they came in together. He's gonna circle back and around and find her once he, gets over being spooked by me. So I started tracking them. Didn't take very long, and I actually bumped them, and they were, you'd never think that, I never thought I'd be able to get, 30 yards from a 1,000-pound cow and two calves that are probably 300 pounds a piece. But sure enough, I did. And there was a moment where she stepped towards me and got between me and the calves, and was kind of looking at me like, I don't know what you are, but you ain't
But I
coming over
don't
here
like
any
you.
closer. I was like, she was definitely not having any of it. But I just stayed my ground. Eventually, she wandered off, and I didn't chase her anymore. I didn't want to spook her out of the area. I figured if I've already blown on that bull, I don't want to blow her out of the area, because he's here because of her. So let's keep her here. So I made a big loop to get the wind right, went all the way around her. And also in the process, I got onto another trail. That was still, the trails themselves were still wet enough you could see if a moose crossed. And I made a big loop around pretty much the whole area and didn't see him or the cow's tracks or the calves leave. So I thought, okay, they're still in here, and it's not that big of an area. And as I was kind of wrapping up my loop, and I'm just thinking, I don't really want to go busting in there. I'm gonna do this calling thing. Maybe I screwed it up for tonight. Maybe I'll just come back in the morning. And I'm walking back towards the truck, and it's just one of those moments where you're alone, so you can't ask your buddy, hey, did you hear that? But you stop and you're like, man, I thought I just heard something. And it sounded like a real low grunt. I got my backpack on, and so I'm thinking, well, maybe I didn't tighten some up. So I take my backpack off and I tighten everything, and I take a couple more steps, and it's almost like, is my boot squeaking? Because almost like as soon as I would start moving, I would hear the grunt, and then I'd stop and it'd be nothing. And this happened probably three or four times before I'm like, all right, I look at the Onyx maps, and I'm like, okay, I can just take off this way off the trail, maybe in the direction where I think I'm hearing this sound at, and it'll still get me in the truck without losing much time, and I won't blow them out if they're over here. Well, little did I know that if I'd have went another 100 yards, I would have seen their tracks crossing the trail, and they were just right up, they were 100 yards from me, just over this little rise. And of course, you don't expect to, once you decide, okay, I'm gonna change direction and go here, you don't expect to take 20 steps and then look up and have, two giant ears looking right at you, but that's exactly what happened. And she had me pegged. She was laying down, the two calves were feeding behind her, and he was standing over her, grunting every time I made noise. So basically, as I'm walking down the trail, as soon as he'd hear me, he'd just make a low grunt like, "She's mine, get out of here." And as soon as I'd stop, he'd just go back to drooling on her. So he was just standing there. And he didn't see me, or he wasn't, he's got other things on his mind. But the cow definitely had me on lockdown. And it's still pretty thick. They were probably only 50 yards away. Yeah, maybe a little bit further, 70. But there was no way I could get a shot. I couldn't even see the top of his head. I still had no idea how big he was because all I can see is basically his chest, right above her. So she stands up and starts moving to the right. I move to the right. He follows. She picked up the pace and was getting out of there, but I took out my I actually was just using my bugle tube for elk. I was using it to rake trees, and I was using it just to kind of transmit the grunts a little louder. And I whipped it out real quick, and I gave him a real low grunt, and he just stopped. I mean, it was just picture perfect broadside, a little bit quartering way, and gave me time to range and draw and send an arrow down, and it's all I needed, just one, and
Nice.
die within sight. And then I had to make the decision of whether or not I'm going to call in the horses. I had a buddy that I'm standby for horses, but I managed to get the truck within probably about a half mile away. So it's, everybody thinks it sounds good when you say you packed out a moose by yourself, but I mean, half mile trips with 100 pounds on your back are pretty fun when you know you finally got your moose. That's no big deal.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it was a lot harder than I thought it'd be. You think you get a once in a lifetime tag, and at least in my head, I was thinking there's only seven tags. This is gonna be great. I'm gonna have collection of animals. If I put in the hard work, I'm gonna see a bunch of quality mature animals to pick through, and I can be selective. He was the only mature bull I saw the entire time. There were definitely a couple other sets of tracks that I tracked that were equally as big, that were probably mature animals. But yeah, it's you got you be lucky with or I should say be careful with what you apply for, because that hunt has one of the best percentages of drawing in Idaho, but it also has, its percentage of harvest is under 30%. So, and last year there was only one other person that got a bull. I just
Now,
left
was
it in.
that an archery only, or was
No.
that it? You could use, okay, I was gonna say, usually
Yeah, you
that's
can
a
do it.
general tag anyway, and you can use, okay.
Yep. Believe me, the gun was in the truck. And if I'd have been there any longer, I was definitely, it was.
Yeah. So yeah, I think, and I've heard that before from other people, that moose is the only like limited entry hunt where it's not like, not that sheep hunting or goat hunting or, some of these really coveted mule deer or, elk tags, whatever, are, gimmies in any way.
Yeah.
But I've heard that those, a lot of those moose hunts, because it's really mainly because of density. I mean, the United States has pretty much shitty density of moose. It doesn't matter where you go, except for maybe, I don't know, maybe Maine.
Colorado's booming right now.
Well, yeah, you know what? I heard that too. Somebody
Yeah.
else told me that Colorado, and I heard they're super tame. Like they don't run away from people,
Amazingly. Hey, I.
because they so they see people all the time, like hiking these,
Yeah. I think they just get used to photographers following around. The area where I was, where I had my deer and my elk tag in Colorado, I saw four or five moose, or four or five bulls, all bulls. One of which was almost, he was about like mine, probably about 42 inches wide, decent. And then there was one of them that, I mean, he's just, he looks like,
giant.
yeah, he doesn't fit
Mutual
in with
Omaha.
Yeah, he looks like he belongs up in Alaska. He's just got points and palms, and they only, they don't give out many tags for that unit. And yeah, I watch people get within 40 yards of him taking pictures.
Oh
And
yeah,
he
I
just
bet.
stands there. And
I
the
bet.
moose in
They get, I
Idaho,
mean, they
not
get
like that.
acclimated. They get
Yeah.
acclimated to the human intrusion.
Yeah.
I had a little moment like you did with the when you found out that you got drawn, only I didn't get drawn. A buddy of mine messages me on Instagram. He's like, "Hey, you better check the moose draw for Maine." And she sends me a screenshot of my name on the list. And it turns out it's the alternate list. So I got drawn to be an alternate, but I'm number 20, so
Oh.
I need 20 people to flake out before I get one. But getting closer and closer every year. We'll see. Maybe.
Yeah, that's mean. There's a sense, to put let you know you're the, they shouldn't even let you know that you're the alternate. That's just cruel.
Yeah, sign for the alternate.
Yeah, I know there's some other hunts like that in Idaho with they're easier to draw, and I say easier because they're still not easy to draw. Bighorn tags. There are some in there that are they are not easy hunts, and just finding a mature ram is hard too. So it's there's hunts like that out there. You got to be careful with what you ask for. And I knew what I was getting myself into. I knew it was a low percentage harvest in there. I knew it was a high percentage of draw, and that's. I just was probably overly cocky and thought, I'm just gonna work my butt off and I'm gonna pull it off. And I mean, I did, but it was a lot more work than I expected. So
Oh, I get it.
could have been a bad result.
Well, hopefully one of these days I'll get a drawn for moose somewhere. I've been twice in Canada,
Yeah.
and I got skunked both times.
Ooh.
Didn't catch the rut when it there. It was right before the rut both times. Never saw a mature, a legal bull. I saw one bull literally look like he had my hand size
Yeah.
palms on either side,
Yep.
and couple cows and a calf, and that was it. Miserable hunt too. It was cold, like it was cold, and I wasn't really prepared for the cold because it was late September. I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, we're not gonna be too high up, and I looked at the weather and I was like, oh, that's not too bad. It's like elk hunting. I figured I'd mostly mid-weight gear stuff, I
Sure.
didn't really have, but oof, man, it was cold. It got cold quick, and I remember my feet were freezing more than anything, like, and because they were constantly wet. And I at the time I was wearing I used to wear lightweight hikers for almost everything because my feet are so freaking screwed up. But I had a really hard time walking in like boots, like boots, and anyway, yeah, I didn't have a very good. And then my father-in-law in the middle of my hunt has a freaking heart attack too on
Oh
top of it.
man.
So I get the phone call. I didn't have service for a couple of days, and I get the phone call, and I'm like, oh, nice. So I had to leave, and that was just, yeah, it was not so good. He's
No.
okay
Good.
though. So if you could share with me a story like maybe that taught you something or
Sure.
changed the way you hunt maybe today, that would be.
Yeah. Like I said, most of my hunting's alone. I really don't. It's not for any reason other than for the most part. I leave here in August. This year will be a lot late July because I drew a Nevada archery tag, so I got
Oh,
to
nice.
get out even earlier. Yeah, my season is completely booked. I've never drawn so many tags. Feel pretty fortunate.
Nice.
But the so I've kind of had to learn at least mountain hunting on my own. And I've used resources like Rockslide and places where people share information. And I listen. I try to listen whenever anybody talks. But you never really know. Like I said or told you earlier, I don't know if I hike fast or hike slow. I have no idea. I don't know if I glass well. I don't know if I sat down with five other guys in spotting scopes. I have no idea if I'd find anything before they're all like, "Yeah, let's go to the next spot." I just don't know. But my second time into Colorado on a high country mule deer hunt, I always leave early. I always try to get out. I can't usually go on too many scouting trips, or if any. I'll probably get on one this year. Where I'll fly out, just do a long weekend, and then come back. But I always try to get there at least a few days early, if not even 5 days early, a week early, to just go in and throw a backpack on and hit a few spots and just do reconnaissance and figure out where I want to be opening day. And that year was incredibly lush. It was just all the basins were just full of green grass and flowers, and it was just great horn growth, great area. It was just there was water in every creek. It was you couldn't ask for more. And I'd found several good bucks. I had more options than, it was a good feeling. But I definitely had a couple bucks in one basin that were, pretty cool and unique, and that's what gets me. I'm not a score guy, but you show me something that's big gnarly bases or extra points. I don't even care what a score, but man, that stuff gets me going pretty good. And I had a couple of them in this basin, and I hadn't seen any other hunters in their scouting, so that was one of the best things. So anyways, I get there the day before the season opens, and I hike up, and sitting on my little glassy spot that's quite a ways away from home. I'm still probably a half mile away, just watching and waiting. And it took until right before dark before the well, it was only one of the two big ones was in there, stood up. But I found him and got some good pictures of him, and he's right at the ground that 200 inch mark. And I thought, all right, this is it. They're still here. There's no one else here. Tomorrow morning is. And it's a really killable basin. That's one of the things I really like about it. You can get above them easy. They don't usually. You can usually watch them bed in there. Once they bed, they kind of disappear because the willows are tall enough. But as long as you can get close to, as long as you use good landmarks, you can get close to them. And I'd kill one in there the year before. So well, packing up the spotting scope, I turn around. And basically it's like, all right, I'll see you in the morning, buddy. You're mine. And right behind me on the same ridge is two other guys. One of them's glassing, his spotting scope's pointed right where I don't want it to be. And the other guy's, swinging around his binoculars, and he swings right to me, and he puts his binoculars down, and you can see him bumping his buddy. He's like, hey, there's a guy right there. And I'm like, oh no. And he kind of gives me the wave, like, shit. Like, I didn't want to see you here. And I didn't want to see him there either. I'm like, oh, crap. So my tent wasn't too far away, so I settled back to it and thinking, all right, well, this is gonna be interesting in the morning. I'm not gonna hike out now to another spot because I could run into the same exact situation in those other basins. So I stuck it out. Morning come, I was right back in that same spot where I could watch and I wouldn't intrude on the deer at all. Knew better where they were at. I didn't see any headlamps. I had no idea where their tent was, so I couldn't hear or see anything that way. By a half hour for daylight, I had pretty much all the bucks located that I had seen the day before, and they were a lot lower. They were even in a better spot. So I thought, well, all right, I'm gonna move up, closer to where the direction they're headed, so I can see down in that tight little spot and hopefully get a real good bead on where they bed. About that time, they're drinking out of a little seep, and all of them's heads whip up at the same time, and they look down the basin, and it was those guys. They were walking right straight up the basin. Maybe they thought just because the thermals are bringing the wind down that they could just walk up, or maybe they had no idea that the bucks were there. I'm sure, and they were late getting there, and whatever it was. The deer weren't having any of it, but they weren't totally blown out. Those guys were still several hundred yards away from them, and the deer couldn't smell them. So all those a little group of bucks takes off around the corner, as far through the basin as I could see them, and then kind of around the corner of a little ridge. Well, I hustled over as far as I could to see them, but they just, they fed out of sight, and they were feeding by the time they left. They weren't in a big hurry, but they weren't sticking around. This isn't going to be good. Those guys are walking up, and they walked right up to where those deer were standing, like started kicking rocks and looking around, and then made a little ground blind, like right in the willows.
Oh, Jesus.
And they're wearing like, super, super dark, camo pattern. I don't know what it was. I'm only a few hundred yards away from it. I just see black blobs. And then they sit down in the willows, and the willows are like coming up to maybe their rib cage, and they're just sitting there. Even if something comes back out, So part of me kind of like thought I need to find another plan, and part of me also thought maybe if I bail off, I get my tent, my camp all packed up in the backpack, and I bail off this mountain down across the canyon in the opposite direction and up that side. That side's way, way higher. It's the bigger peak in that area. I might actually be able to see around that corner and see where those bucks are bedded, or see if they're see maybe where they went. Or maybe those guys will leave and I'll see him. But either way, I'd still be able to see back this way. Plus, I'd be able to see on the other side too. So I packed up down, I don't know how many vertical feet. It was a lot. It took me, an hour and a half, 2 hours to get over there. Back up the other side and blast back. Those guys are still sitting in the willows. And it probably took me about an hour, but one of the little bucks that was with the big guy stood up and they were in the willows around the corner and I could see him. And well, I could see him anyways, and I knew he was with them, so the other ones shouldn't be too far. So I got to just a little bit better vantage point, and pretty soon, he lays down and another one stands up. And it's just like, they're playing a little pop-up game where they just stretch their legs and it's midday, or yeah, it's probably late afternoon, it's probably 4. And the big one, the one I wanted, never actually stood up, but he moved, and I was able to see his rack. He hadn't like turned it or swatted out a fly. I never would have saw him, but he was laying there in the willows, and he was probably only a couple hundred yards from those guys. The whole group was. So the way the wind was, the deer couldn't smell them at that time. But as soon as the thermals, as soon as it calmed down, and it was a nice, beautiful bluebird day, I didn't anticipate any big storm coming in, and the thermals were going to bring those guys scent right down to them. So I thought, well, one way or another, those deer are not going to be in there tomorrow morning. These guys are going to, their stink's going to blow them out of there as soon as the thermals switch. Unless they move before then. If they move before then, maybe they walk right up to those guys. But I thought, either way, I know where he's bedded, and I'm going. So I grabbed my stuff again, bailed back down the mountain, back up the other side, and then I had to traverse around the, while still staying far enough below them that I didn't think my updraft would get to them. And they were kind of on a little flat, above a steep, like a little bench. And I get around the corner, and I tried to use as many landmarks as I could, but it was such a snaggy, I don't know if it was an old burn, but it was just a bunch of crap that all looked the same. But I got over there, and I popped up over the really steep part, and there was a couple trees I was using landmarks, so I'm like, oh, I think that's it. But now, of course, I can't see him because I'm on his. I'm actually even below him a little bit. So I just started moving forward. There was a game path that went into the willows, and I thought, I'm just gonna move in real slow. And I dropped the backpack. I made it probably, oh, 20, 30 yards before, I'm focusing forward, not really watch my feet. But it's such a well-used game trail that there's not really a whole lot of sticks or debris or rocks on this thing. I can be pretty quiet. Didn't have my boots off, and I stepped right into a little deep muck hole that was bottomless. And I went like, high ankle, mid calf, like instant, like mud. And you're like, your instant reaction is to pull your leg out. And as soon as I did that, it was like, like this super loud suction sound, and probably me stumbling backwards. And I look up, and you can see like whoop whoop, all of a sudden there's like three sets of ears and racks up above the willows looking at me. It took me a second to pick out Hez. He didn't stand up, but a couple of little smaller bucks did, and they were probably about 100 yards out. He was a little bit closer to me than that, and he didn't stand up, but he was focused on me. I could see his rack and I could see his ears. And I don't know how long we stayed in that position, as I'm like, basically trying, balancing on one foot, trying not to step back in this muck hole and try not to be seen. But there was a one snag right in front of me, an old burned up tree that probably saved me. And eventually they laid back down, and he refocused his ears back to wherever he was before and kind of forgot about me. And I slumped down on the ground and started crawling. I got as far as I could. It was still gonna be a long shot, but I'd peek up my head every once in a while and just glass over. And if I stayed below the willows, they can't see me. But if I went any further, I wouldn't have had a shot. And where I could see, where this one spot where I thought it's gonna happen here, if it's gonna happen, there was just a tiny little window, a couple feet wide, where I could see part of his back and his shoulder and his neck. And well, if he stands up, that's gonna be it right there. And then we waited. Started, it rains every single afternoon in Colorado in that area, and I got soaked because I'd left my backpack behind me. And meanwhile, I can actually, over my right shoulder, see up above those guys, and I think they actually at that point saw me crawling around. At some point, they had noticed me, and they're glassing, and I'm glassing back to them. And I'm looking over, it's almost like a triangle, and
Yeah.
I literally waited until the thermal switched, and their scent came down. You could see all those deer kind of do the same thing at the same time. All their noses kind of popped up, and they stood. And as soon as he did, I had him already ranged, and I zipped one through him, and he didn't make
Nice.
it. I mean, it was a little bit quartering too, and I basically buried the whole arrow inside him, and he just stumbled 20 yards and was done. And I threw my arms up like I was, just king of the world for a couple of seconds, and just like, I cannot believe I just pulled that off. And I turn around to see those guys stand up out of the willows and just like, what just happened?
Nice.
And I waved at them, and I kind of threw my hands up in the air like, I got them. And thinking, if I were them, they knew I was hunting that same buck, and I saw them pull something off, I'd have been like, I would have walked over and been like, heck yeah, dude, that's awesome. I want to see him with you.
Yeah.
But they just turned around and they walked out of there. So
Oh, jeez.
yep, I didn't make their day. But he was bigger than I thought. Crazy gnarly bases. I mean, you cannot wrap your hands around them. They're like almost 9 inches, and he's just palmated and thick and heavy and old. Big old buck. Old wise. And yeah, couldn't have been happier. What I learned was, is basically, it doesn't matter where they're at. It doesn't matter how far you have to hike. You just gotta go for it. You just can't leave anything out there. Had I not decided to, just burn who knows how many calories and how, 2 miles open to the side, or a mile and a half over, and then up, and then back across. I mean, I was whooped
Yeah.
just from that. It was day one. It was opening day. I didn't leave anything. I didn't leave anything in the tank basically for day two.
Right.
Had it not worked, who knows how I would have felt about it. But looking back, it's like, you can't hold back. And
No, especially not
so,
when there's an opportunity, even if it's, I
yeah.
mean, if it's one of those things where you're like, I know this is gonna go wrong, and you have more days, then maybe you reserve yourself. But other than that, I'm with
Yeah.
you, man. Go for it.
Yeah, and with those guys there, I knew he was going to get blown out one way or another. It was a late
Why?
night because it's all uphill to the truck from that point.
Oh,
Well, not
God.
all, but most of it. And I deboned him and got him back to the truck about 3. Had him in my buddy's freezer in the next closest town probably by mid-morning the next day, and then cleaned up and back in there. And I had an over-the-counter elk tag, and I ended up killing a 320 bull on day four. That was
Nice.
probably the best 4 days in Colorado I've spent.
I bet.
But there was that, it's
I'm gonna
yeah.
have to attach a GPS to you and start following you around.
It's
Man.
it wasn't it's not always that good. I went back to that same unit this year for elk in Colorado, and I saw plenty of good bulls, but man, I don't know if I had just the moose on my mind or what it was, but made every mistake you can make, and I made them all twice. One of
Jeez.
them, I blew so many opportunities that, I remember like a month after I got home, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that one. Oh, and that one too. It's like you remember new, or it's like, oh, I forgot all about blowing it that day.
Crazy.
And some years you only get one opportunity and you make it happen. You're like, wow, well, that's the way it, and then other
Not
years,
funny.
oh, it's painful.
I don't know, I'd much rather have a hunt with a crap ton of opportunities. I shouldn't, it's not that I would like to have it over harvesting one, but when it's a bunch of opportunities and maybe there was a really hard hunt and you finally get one on the last day or whatever,
Oh
I think
yeah,
those
that's
are
perfect.
always better.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I
Yep.
like those better than walking out there the first day and shooting something,
No. Yep.
But
Well, it's a lot of times for me. I like I said, I usually try to get there early to scout. So my first day of hunting is usually not my first day of working them. So it's I'm
You already
okay
know
with
what
that my first
you're doing. You already know where you're
day.
going. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Well, more so with deer than elk. Elk, you can never really, like, seem
Their
to cover a lot more ground, but.
loop is a lot bigger. They don't hang in one spot quite as much. Well,
Yeah,
cool, man.
this year's gonna be a whirlwind. At this point, I hope I don't draw anything else. I was actually kind of relieved to see my mountain goat app in Idaho was unsuccessful, because I am completely booked. This was supposed to be the year that I was gonna burn my Colorado elk points, because I've been just hunting over the counter units there for a while, and maybe Colorado limited entry elk, and then maybe Nevada deer. And then there was the first results come out, and I drew a Wyoming tag that I had. I mean, I had 1 point in Wyoming. I just hunted there 2 years ago, so I just kind of just threw a dart at the board, and I picked a
Right.
hunt that I knew wouldn't interfere with my Colorado hunt. And it's a firearm hunt, so, and it's not one of the ones where you can get the bow license and hunt the
Okay.
archery. So I got that, and then I hit New Mexico late deer, and then I hit Nevada archery deer, and I hit
Nice.
Montana, a good limited entry elk tag in Montana that I hunted just 2 years ago. And then I hit both my tags in Colorado. I am absolutely booked in Kansas. I'm basically, I'm gonna have to fire myself if
There
that's
you
the
go.
law.
Yeah, I didn't do so well this year. But I can't complain, man. I've had like a good 5-year run. And that's it though. Like, I
Oh,
had
yeah.
so many points in so many states, and I was just like, okay, this year I'm drawing, this year I'm drawing, this year,
Yep.
and now it kind of burnt. I still got quite a few points for elk in Wyoming. So I should draw a pretty decent limited entry tag there next year.
Nice.
At least according to Go Hunt anyway. Yeah, a
You've got a couple of
couple of
Zyvex tags, haven't you?
yeah, 2015 and 2016. Yeah.
That's the hunt I want to go on right there.
Oh, that's an awesome hunt, but that's not a hunt you want to do by yourself.
I've already talked to a guy because of that. I made that decision actually.
Yeah.
Yep,
It's
I've
not that you
already.
can't do it by yourself, you can. But then you're
Yeah.
relying a lot on luck,
Yeah.
unfortunately. It's
No,
more
that's
like
and
tree stand hunting. You're gonna
yeah.
find a spot, you're gonna sit, and you're gonna wait for something to come by, and it's 'cause it's really hard to do because everything you look at, like if you look at the mountain, you see where you want to go. It's nothing like what it is when you get there. You can't tell that it's not. It's like there'll be a cliff here, and there'll be a cliff in front of it, and then there'll be a crevasse in between, and you don't even know that it's there until you're up there. And yeah, it's pretty crazy, pretty crazy hunt.
One of these years, maybe.
The 2015, I got one. 2016, I missed three times.
Oh.
I went out there, I won, and I don't know. I mean, I know the reason why I missed on all of them. So it wasn't a surprise to me. But I only had 5 days to hunt that second year, and I was so pissed off. I was so pissed off that I had to leave early because I already had plans to go to New York. So I had no idea in my head that I was ever going to draw Ibex 2 years in a row. It took me
Right.
9 years to draw it the first time.
Yeah.
So when I drew it was kind of like I already had plans. I don't know if it was a wedding or some shit, but anyway, I was going back to New York, but I was going to hunt when I was in New York anyway. So it turns out I didn't score my Ibex, but then I ended up shooting my biggest whitetail at
Nice.
and it was a target buck that it was a buck that I chased for 4 years in New York. So it kind of
Nice.
like it was kind of bittersweet. I didn't get to like finish out that hunt, and I know, especially that I had already had three opportunities, because just even I think I want to say like they only say like 15% of people actually even get a makeable shot,
Wow.
so yeah, and I had three, but yeah, so it ate at me for a little bit, and then I was in New York for 2 days, and I shot him, and I was like, all right, cool.
That helps with the sting,
Yeah,
yeah.
it erased the memory of it. It's real cool.
Yeah.
So, but
I've got plenty of those too. I look back now and it's, man, I'm just a little bit different. Would have
right,
been.
that's the way the man planned it for us.
Yeah.
So, where can our listeners find out more about you?
Instagram's probably that the best, and that and rockslide.com. Always doing a review of some new gear product down there for them, and then Instagram is just my name, Tony, with an underscore, and then Treach. I'm on Facebook too, but I pretty much just bounce stuff off Instagram to Facebook. That's pretty much how I use it. So.
Gotcha. Well, cool. Thanks for coming on and sharing your stories with us. gonna look to have you on maybe here a little bit before you hit that, or maybe right after your Nevada hunt, because that's early enough.
Well, I leave here, and then I basically don't come back. So I'll
Oh,
be on the
you're just
road.
gone. You'll be on the road the whole time.
I'll leave July 28th. I probably not be back until late November. Yeah, load up the truck with everything I need for all those
And
trips.
you're married?
She wants to, but I want her to at least suffer through two of these seasons before she knows what she's getting into.
Ah, got it. That's
She
why
was
you
there
did that.
last year, and
That makes
she
perfect
put up with it.
sense. Perfect sense.
She's a great woman, and my guys at work are great. And it's like I said, I've built the company around being able to do that. And yeah, it's a challenge, but it's what I think about all year long.
Yeah, I know. It's a sickness. All right, buddy. Well, good luck to you. Maybe we'll catch up with you when you get back from your hiatus.
Sounds good.
All
Thanks,
right,
John.
take it easy. Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews. Plus, we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.